This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we're here to talk Star Wars news. We're here to deal with probably my voice sounding slightly different because I screamed all weekend for 3 days at a Schmodown shoot. So I apologize if I sound a little different. At least in my ears, I'm different. Joseph, am I different? You hear me more than any human being in the world.
Well, my apologies to Grace that I hear you more. And I would say you have like 10% more Grievous in your voice, which It's not annoying or anything like that. It's fun. It's just a little bit of like, kid, I've been around the block. Excuse me, Obi-Wan. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I love it. The negotiator. we are here to discuss Star Wars news, breaking news from a long, long time ago. And looking into the future, we got a lot of Kenobi news. Someone went scouring the WGA websites and got some big scoops. A lot to get to. And and a pretty darn cool sneak preview of the upcoming Brotherhood book that's coming our way. But before coming your way and our way, before we get to all that, I'm going to settle down and let you all know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. A little time for a catch-up Star Wars life adventures, a calm before a Star Wars storm, and I mean that in a good way, with Kenobi and Celebration and all this stuff happening. So, Jen, how's life? How's Star Wars?
Star Wars is great this weekend. I was watching Star Wars Rebels, as I have been every day, and my daughter, she occasionally will pop in and watch like a little bit. No, when was it? On Saturday? Saturday. She goes, Mom, let's watch Star Wars Rebels. I said, you know, it's okay. If you don't have to. Like, I'll do it on my own. She goes, no, I want to watch it. So we took it from my computer to the big screen of our living room. And we watched 5 episodes.
Wow.
I did not move because I did not want to ruin the moment. Because I was like, at any moment, she's going to be like, Mom, can we watch something else? She was into it. She loves Star Wars. I can't believe it.
Interesting. Love this.
How old is she now?
She's 6.
Okay. That's a great 6. Star Wars age.
It is perfect. Star Wars Rebels is the perfect age for her. And, you know, some of it goes obviously like over her head and she had a lot of questions or she'll see things. And, oh man, we're on a season 3 right now. And it's when Ezra started, you know, using the Sith holocron at the beginning of the season. And that whole thing. And he's dabbling in the dark side or, you know, and giving into his anger. And there were some great moments that I was able to talk to her about that, you know, like, because she now knows who Ezra is. And she's like, but he's a good guy. Why is he doing that? And blah, blah, blah. And oh, it's so great. You know, and she's like, she keeps calling Kanan his dad. I'm like, it's not his dad, but it's kind of like his dad.
Not wrong. You're not wrong.
Right. And she like wants to know the different species. And it's just, oh, it's so thrilling. I'm so happy.
Like, obviously the narrative, as I remember it, it's been a while, is Ezra explicitly does some, like, you know, nasty stuff with the Force and that. But is she, like, just really picking up even on just sort of the symbolism of why is he playing with that naughty red box he's not supposed to?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. And, like, seeing the flashes of anger in his eyes, how he's, like, you know, suddenly now he's giving a lot of attitude. I mean, this is the beginning of season 3. And she's like, oh, not making good choices. He shouldn't do that.
He's sassing his not dad. Yeah.
I guess it's kind of good that she's picking up that it's bad versus, you know, maybe in a few years she'll be like, you know what? I'm gonna play with the Sith holocron, Mom.
I know. There was a very ABC special kind of moment, you know, why are you doing this? Kanan tells him, because it's just like it had this kind of like say no to drugs kind of vibe, which I liked. I liked that teachable moment.
That's so great. We talk so much. Obviously, Lucas says it very explicitly at conventions, but we talk so much about how Star Wars is meant to be for, you know, people growing up and figuring things out. It's so great to hear that actively in practice.
I was shocked. I was shocked. I was like, this is fantastic. Now I can share all my Star Wars knowledge with also my knowledge from life.
I love that. That's big time stuff. I like to sit some adults down and have them love Star Wars Rebels in the same way and connect with Star Wars in the same way.
They could learn a lot. I have.
Learn a lot.
Yeah.
Joseph, you, sir.
Yeah, I've had a good busy week making some good progress on some projects I've been working on forever. So that is very nice to finally feel like maybe crossing a finish line here or there on some projects. And then I've been having some fun Star Wars adventures. I'm finally reading the Legends Kenobi book, which I have had my eye on since it came out. I think I remember being really excited about it when it was announced. And then I got a little deterred by the like, and this is the last book that's not going to matter canon wise. Yeah, right. You know, and it is that time. And I've thought about reading it and I was like, oh, before the show, I got to read it before the Kenobi show. So I'm definitely enjoying it. It's definitely a Western. I have to remind myself of that at the beginning because I'm anxious and be like, just give me Kenobi now. Like, no, first meet the town people, like, all right. But I'm really enjoying that. And then my wife and I, like I've been saying the last couple of weeks, have been rewatching the Indiana Jones films. We watched Crystal Skull, which I like. I'm just going to throw that out. Walk away like a bomb. Controversy. I enjoy Crystal Skull. I think it's good. But then... You like it,
Ken? I'm with you. I rewatched it again. You know, I hadn't seen it since the theater, and just let society tell me not to go back to it. Does that make sense? Where it's like, I guess we all suck. But I remember coming out of it and going, all right, some things I didn't love. Some of the CGI I didn't love. Some of the beats I didn't love. But there's a lot of it I thought was pure indie. And then I looked around and went, oh, I guess not. Okay, I'll see y'all later.
Yeah. Rewatching it, especially after just watching, you know, every week the other three, it feels absolutely similar to me, just like the pacing, the tone, the ideas. Look, yeah, I would be fine with if Mutt didn't get hit in the crotch like five times. I'm good with one or half, even half of one. But we really enjoyed that. We enjoyed that so much. I was like, asked my wife, like, I don't know if you want to do this, but would you watch the Young Indiana Jones Adventure? They're on Paramount Plus. And she was like, sure. So we watched the first weird but good episode called My First Adventure. did either of you watch Young Indiana Jones when it came out? And do you know the weird backstory of the way the episodes are presented now?
I watched it weekly back in the day. I don't remember as much of the shows I'd like to. I'm going to have to do a rewatch myself. I do kind of remember some of the weird formatting. Right, some little flashbacks, flash forwards. I can't remember. I remember old Indy showing up, and he was younger than Indy will be now.
Just about, yeah, yeah. Jennifer, did you watch it back in the day?
I vaguely remember the credits and not much else.
My brother and I watched it religiously when it was on back in the early 90s, and I remember being really engaged by it and fascinated by it. It's just if you don't know, it's just a fun, quick Wikipedia read of the weird history of the show. Like, basically, it when it was aired, it went back and forth between 9-year-old and 17-year-old Indy. And, you know, long story short, for eventual DVD release, Lucas was like, you know what? I want to make this chronological. And he removed the bookends with old Indy, and he recombined the episodes so that they're all in chronological order. And it's just it's fascinating. A Lucas history of Lucas going, nope, I'm going to reorganize things so it's the way I want them to be. I mean, like, the show itself is fascinating for Indiana Jones, but just kind of fascinating as Star Wars adjacent history because it's Rick McCallum. It's all these other names you recognize from the prequels. It's, you know, kind of the very beginning of prequel testing ground. And then the great Star Wars history of, and I don't care what anybody else says, I'm going to totally redo this and make the original versions very hard to find.
I did not know that. Oh, I'm going to have to take a deeper dive.
Yeah,
I do the McCallum of it all, which is great. Yeah, all the names. It's great that he was getting his team together. It was like, cool, let's go to Star Wars. But that's fascinating. Okay.
Yeah. So they're definitely weird. They're definitely very Lucas. But like early on, I don't know, maybe third scene, right away you get some C.O. Bibble. Oliver Ford Davies, right there.
Really?
Having dinner with 9-year-old Indiana Jones. I'm looking forward to seeing all of the various connections.
Oh, that's amazing. And it's on Paramount Plus?
Yep. Everything but one episode that they don't have, I think, music rights for. But yeah, like 21, like 80 to 90 minute episodes. It's very weird. But so far fun. Last thing I wanted to be sure to mention is a little bit of the sad Star Wars news, but I wanted to acknowledge it. The designer artist Charles White III passed away, and he is the person who made, along with Drew Struzan, the Star Wars Style D Circus poster. That is the one for the 1978 re-release. And it is the one that, you know, Luke and Leia are swinging.
Right.
You got Vader down the corner, and it's got it looks like a poster that's plastered on a wall, and it's got the little Obi-Wan on the side. I wanted to acknowledge that because it is my favorite poster. It is above my computer, and I look at it all the time. So wanted to acknowledge that passing and thank Charles White III for this awesome poster.
Absolutely. Good call there on that one there. Part of Star Wars history indeed. For me, it was one of those weeks again where you kind of life busy, hard working over on that the trivia show we all every once in a while get involved in. But I'm a full time over there on once a month. We do big bulk shooting, which is a test of one's mettle anyways. Some things went awry, and it was just a lesson. I felt like a little bit like Han Solo, just going, "Don't worry, we'll figure it out. We'll get there." and then also the old Qui-Gon dropping to the knees thing we talk about a lot. It's just that might be the most powerful thing for me in Star Wars now. Just close your eyes, close your eyes, and get through that. Lean on what you learned from Star Wars to get through the tough situation. But hanging around safely with a bunch of movie fans, eventually I got asked the question that Star Wars fans, but more specifically Star Wars podcasters, hate getting asked. Hey, so what'd you think about Book of Boba Fett? And with immediately four sets of eyes spin around to look at me, you know, like, I'm going to see what this guy says. And I said, I happened to really enjoy it and didn't get jumped for it, which was good.
Oh, good. that's the fear, right? I mean, if somebody really just wants to have a back and forth conversation, is great. But often it's the like, I'm asking you so I can tell you you're wrong when you tell me you like it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone just kind of nodded. I don't know. It's also a weird situation, too, where, like, we always talk about the three of us. We're, like, the Star Wars people in our certain friend groups. And I think a lot of people listening to Four Center are the Star Wars person at the office. Like, oh, Bob's here. He's a Star Wars guy. He listens to Star Wars. So to kind of have that set up in a bunch of movie nerds where, I was, and you as well, Joseph, known as Star Wars competitors. You kind of, the debate is on. Like, Star Wars guy says this. Oh, I'm gonna engage him on that and tell him why he's wrong. So it could be. Right. I think a lot of listeners experience that too. So,
yeah. Well, I'm really glad that you had a positive experience because I can get overly grumpy about that, and it's great to know that I should take a Qui-Gon knee because maybe sometimes people are just asking to ask,
right?
Yeah,
and not to set me up for a fall.
It's a true test of Jedi. It's the knowledge and defense versus living to strike you down before you can pull your weapon out. And I fail at it a lot. I really do. We're all just so used to getting, and end up having a couple good discussions on the style of the show, which we will admit is not for everybody.
No.
And that's a good conversation to have and all that stuff. But yeah, no. Put the lightsaber away and just enjoy the conversation. All right, everybody, we are going to dive into Star Wars news. It is definitely still the season of Kenobi, and welp, time to readjust our Obi-Wan Kenobi viewing schedule. In proof that Star Wars loves the podcasts and pundits and pontificators, but doesn't, you know, really care about their schedules, they have made a move for the general public, which is, I think, how they should do it, by the way. In a video featuring Ewan McGregor himself, it was revealed that the premiere of the Obi-Wan Kenobi series has been pushed back from May 25th to May 27th, and we're getting the first two episodes. They're going to drop at the same time. There's not much to analyze about the move, but I think we can go into it.
I'm gonna go ahead and disagree with that.
Exactly. Okay. Let's get into it. I have notes. Dude,
go into it. All right. Yeah, I'll do the summary here. Put smack dab in the middle of the Star Wars celebration, clears up some space for maybe the next MCU show, She-Hulk perhaps, and gives us a lot more Star Wars to watch in one sitting. So, what are our thoughts, Jennifer?
Okay. This, to me, was really interesting because there's been a lot of things moving and it could be related to, like, you know, the pandemic, obviously, that's still ongoing. So if we think about it, first we had the move of Celebration, which wasn't initially scheduled for August, and then it got moved to May, right?
Yeah, like twice now, right?
Yeah. So that's already in play. Obviously, we know May 25th. Is an important date in Star Wars history. May 25th, 1977 is when Star Wars was first released in theaters. So that's a great day. But then they not only move it to Friday, which makes sense for the average person who is, you know, they have jobs and school and, you know, they don't have time like us crazy Star Wars fans to watch it on Wednesday night. But then they release two episodes, but there's only six episodes total. and is in the middle of their convention, which is going to, are they going to have any, like, I just have so many questions. I'm dying to hear your guys' thoughts because to me, I was like, what is going on? What is their thinking behind this?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Jennifer. Sorry, Ken, for pushing back in the middle of your good news presentation. I just felt like, is there something wrong with me? Ken doesn't think there's much to analyze, and I've been like, I'm out over here with like a conspiracy theory board kind of level of analysis myself. Yeah. I think I'm going along with the first thing that struck me is I'm personally bummed out about the May 25th date just because I did like that, that anniversary celebration. I just tracked down a copy of the Entertainment Weekly with the Kenobi photo, and I'm just very entertained that the final print edition of Entertainment Weekly is now wrong. So it goes with print, I guess. But trying to figure it all out, like, so I double checked the StarWars.com article, and it's not that they're moving the show to Friday. It's they're moving the premiere to Friday because it says, unless they change this, with subsequent episodes debuting each Wednesday.
So unless
they change that, Ms. Marvel is debuting on June 8th. So this doesn't help them with that MCU conflict. If they had announced they're moving the whole show to Friday and not doubled up episodes, I'd be like, oh, they're finally saying Marvel on Wednesday, Star Wars on Friday or something, you know, so they don't conflict.
Right.
There's no Moon Knight problem because Moon Knight ends on May 4th. As of now, Kenobi's last episode is on June 22nd and nothing else MCU is announced with dates. She-Hulk sometime this year. So I don't know what they're avoiding. Like when they shifted Hawkeye, it was definitely like because Hawkeye and Boba Fett were going to have a fight.
Right.
But is of the current dates, I don't understand how this helps them with an MCU thing. Maybe there's something I've missed or maybe something they're going to announce, obviously. But as of right now, the only thing that makes sense to me is that they decided that Friday is more powerful for average viewers. But the whole reason they moved it to Wednesday is they claimed their engagement numbers were so much better. But I don't know if they did. I'm wondering. So Bob Chapek is supposed to be a numbers guy. So did Bob himself go, give me numbers on hardcore nerds versus just casual people who know who Darth Vader is and go, those people will tune in more on Friday. The casual people. That's the only thing that makes a ton of sense to me because I don't think they'd move it just for Celebration.
Right.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes sense to me from Celebration, sorry, I'll say this one thing and I'll shut up. The only thing that makes sense to me about Celebration is if there's some element of the show that we don't fully know or fully understand that drops in the second episode. So by getting them both out, it frees up the convention to hype something that we don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't think they'd make that big of a change just to accommodate the convention. That's full of people who are going to watch this show at any time for no matter what.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where I'd start. And look, I think you're both right. A lot to discuss. And if you do look like Charlie Day at your conspiracy board from It's Always Sunny, Joseph, I think it's great. No, I think I can't imagine this being just because of Celebration. It doesn't track. It's not that they don't want the synergy of that. But again, we can make a Chapek joke, but I don't think anyone's sitting over there at the Glendale offices going, well, we better maximize that panel on Friday. just doesn't work that way. So yeah, a reveal, but maybe there's, I don't know. I hadn't been tracking the MCU stuff. I said She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, the next one. Is that the next one?
Yeah, Ms. Marvel's been announced to premiere on June 8th. And She-Hulk is supposed to come out sometime this year, but they haven't said when. So every possibility that there are MCU shuffles coming up and they just haven't announced them yet. And that will make sense of all of this.
Yeah, that's true. It's the other, the other side of it could drop. And I have some, as far as the date, but also this is just from the podcasting Star Wars coverage side. I'm really bummed we at Force Center lost our West Coast advantage.
Yeah,
we were going to have the show watched, analyzed, and published before we even set foot at Celebration. Now, like a lot of people, we're trying to figure out the best way to do it, which is a minor concern to all of this. But I mean, that was my first thought. I was like, well, damn it. we were going to have work done before the party started.
I mean, so, I do think that is a factor of they are with doubling up the episode. They are willing to let go of a week of buzz and podcasts and social media engagement and think pieces. You know, like that's a whole week less of mm-hmm. buzz generated.
Yeah, and that's that is perhaps the thing I don't want to say disappointment's a weird word to throw at this because this we're getting a Kenobi series in the middle of Star Wars Celebration, much to be happy about. But yeah, I the two episodes, I don't love that. Mm-hmm. I really just kind of like the week to week for a lot of various reasons. It's not the end of the world, obviously, but man, that got me a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, like, why? I don't understand. This is such a big, big show, highly anticipated, only 6 episodes. Why are they going to do 2 episodes at the same time during their big celebration? To me it's like they're watering down the, like you're saying, the buzz, the excitement, unless they're looking at these episodes and going, we need to have the second one, like the first one's not enough, which is very surprising. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't want to believe that.
I want to jump in, Justin, for sure, but like I'm thinking of the Hawkeye conversation again. Personal taste aside, I'm not a binger, and it's not just that I can't take 2 episodes in 1 week. I just like ruminating a little bit more with my stories. I also like delaying the satisfaction. I like the anticipation of next week. I actually really revel in that. Going to the Hawkeye thing, that's the only MCU show I spent a lot of time with, right, so far. And I saw a lot of the conversation of, I'm so glad they released 2, because that first episode would not have been enough, to your point, Jennifer. And I'm like, I don't come from a point where I get that. Right. You know, where I'm like,
yeah,
well, it's the first episode. Like, that's a separate conversation. Anyways, Joseph.
Yeah, no, I actually think that is probably the most compelling idea. I think because these shows, especially the 6-parters, are, in my opinion, structured more like a double long movie. Like they still have the 3-act structure, which means the first 2 episodes are kind of act 1. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times the first episode is table setting. And if you're just interested in, I want to get into the groove of the world, I want to get into the mood of the world, but the first real big conflict is just going to kind of pop right at the end, that's fine for some viewers. But for other viewers who I think are tuning into a television show going, I kind of expect a individual episode to have like a real big beginning, middle, and end, high stakes right in the middle. And that, I think, was a little bit of the deal with Hawkeye. It was a schedule thing, but it was also like, we're basically presenting act 1. Because it's the first 2 episodes. I think Book of Boba Fett took some hits on that first episode. I think people would have been way more pumped if the first 2 episodes dropped. Mm-hmm. Just kind of structurally, the amount of narrative, the amount of conflict, the amount of understanding of the rest of the story that they got. Mm. So that does make some sense to me of like, we really want to hook as many casual viewers as possible. Let's make sure they're super jazzed and let's get it to them on the weekend so they can watch 2 in a row.
Yeah. That's it. You're absolutely right. Now, and we'll talk about the writers, but looking especially at who's on the last 2 episodes, someone in particular we'll mention. It's they're going to do the first 2, and then it's a 3-part structure. That makes so much sense. And I remember watching the Book of Boba Fett, and I think I even watched it with my husband. He fell asleep, but it was kind of slower paced, if I remember correctly. But I remember thinking, okay, I get where they're going, but it was the second episode that really grabbed me. So, they do need that second episode to get everyone hooked.
Yeah, look, and to be clear, again, I'm talking from my personal point of view, and that's not the way Disney needs to program. So right, I think, Joseph, your first act theory is 100% right. And how that often is the case is how many times do you hear nothing happened in that episode,
right?
Mm-hmm. And that's usually episode 1. Every year Game of Thrones the new season began with an episode of Reef putting the pieces back on the board. It's so slow, nothing happened,
right?
It's just the way of it. Again, maybe it's a separate conversation, but it's my point of view versus the general public, and you're always going to go towards it.
Yeah, and Ken, I'm with you about the actual just like convention experience, like I will be Qui-Gon about it and take a knee and embrace the chaos, and there might be some benefits of some screenings at the convention, seeing it with, you know, hundreds of cheering fans might be great. There might be a lot of benefits, but it just, it feels to me like like Jennifer, you were saying, it's just so much at once. Like, you planned like a whole day of birthday parties where you're going to do karaoke and then you're going to go dancing and you're going to have some cake. And then you're suddenly like, yeah, you can still go karaoke and dancing and cake, but you're all going to be in the roller coaster at the same time.
Right.
It's all good, but please, so much at once.
It's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And look, again, we are digging in, but you know, we're all blessed to have this. We know this.
Yeah,
we're just kind of splitting hairs here, but it's also very interesting. The business of it all, the business of Star Wars, the business of movies is it can be pretty fascinating at times, and why things happen like this. So it's big. And the big question is, if anyone out there listening in Force Center has this on their mind, I will be watching it alone in my hotel room.
Obi-Wan, like,
no, I am already thinking, because Joseph will be down there as well, probably sharing a wall with me. I'm thinking of bringing a big TV down to hook up my laptop so I don't have to watch Kenobi on my laptop.
Yeah, no, I mean, we listeners, we have not discussed yet how we're going to deal with covering this. Should we just stay up all night, watch both episodes, then record the podcast, and then get up at probably 9 a.m. for whatever the important big panel is at Celebration?
It's on the list.
Good problems to have.
Absolutely. We'll keep you updated. And I think, Joseph, you could be right. More information could drop on the other side of this that makes it all seem even, you know, more, make more sense of the situation, is guess what I'm trying to say there. But Jen, you mentioned it. Speaking of the writers, did the WGA reveal the Kenobi writing staff? Let's dig in. I love this. I don't know who would have decided to go visit the WGA website. Maybe it's, I don't know. And, you know, Joseph, you had a theory as well. I'll let you share if you want to there too. But anyways, the Writers Guild of America has the credited writers for Obi-Wan Kenobi listed. And it's very interesting. As was previously known, Joby Harold had taken over the lion's share of the writing from Hossein Amini. But Amini will retain 2 story-by credits, 3 co-writing and teleplay credits. Man, I spoke a lot this weekend in my mouth. So does not want to work. I want to start there. That's interesting to me. We already kind of got a sense from some of those recent interviews that, hey, the story was kind of almost there. We'd taken the story, but we wanted to go different directions. We hear that in Hollywood. But Joseph, going to dig into that credit of a story by retaining some kind of story by. Trevorrow retained a story by for Rise of Skywalker. There's a lot of kind of red tape, legalities, and all those kind of things attached to those rulings. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to realize about the credits is some of it is absolutely about what's actually on screen, but a ton of it is just politics and rules. Yeah. And I think that, you know, sometimes decisions get made. I mean, that's just kind of a standard thing. There's a great Twitter thread about this recently about if you're staffed on a show, you know, sometimes it will say written by, and that's a legal thing that you get paid by, but you're the writer who wrote the first draft, and then the room or the showrunner entirely wrote it, and you'll have maybe a line or a word left. It wasn't even WGA, but when I worked on that Adult Swim show, Tigtone, they just made the decision to put a written by credit and then credit all of the writers in the room every episode for, I believe, story by, just because, like, we were brainstorming, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
In some episodes, it'd be like, that key idea in there, I had that. Then there'd be another episode of like, I contributed nothing to what ended up on the screen, but my name was still on it because that's the way they decided to do it. And that isn't even getting into the weeds of WGA. That's for animation. So that's my big picture thing. I think that there are tales of story credit and ampersand that starts to create a picture for me with these writers. Hossein Amini thing is pretty clear because he wrote all these drafts. So I think some elements are probably retained the way, because he's not just credited throughout. I think he's credited in specific episodes. So I think that one is really about, there are elements of that original draft that remain. I think it's a different story with the other writers that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Jen, any thoughts up top there with the credits and all that?
Yeah. I mean, I just think about like when, you know, it can be a very sticky thing when someone feels like their idea got taken and they did not get credit. That's how lawsuits happen. It happens all the time. I see it on Twitter. Hey, that was my idea and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's why writers and directors and producers are like, do not send me any pitches. Don't send me any of your material. materials. I cannot read it because they know if they read anything, they can be sued later on. Yeah, that just all makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The ampersand of it all. yeah, an arbitration and 55% of this movie's yours. It's pretty fascinating and sometimes brutal, some of the stories there. Let's get into some of the names, though. And I had off air wanted to make sure, I hadn't heard any of these names. No rumors had popped up, at least in my world. Joseph, relatively the same a name here and there. Maybe, I don't know if Jen, you heard anything, but here's the names. Stuart Beatty, who written many things, but maybe most notably Collateral, one of my favorite movies, and Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. Credits also there for Andrew Stanton. You might know some of his work, Toy Story, Finding Nemo and Dory, Wall-E, big stuff there. And Hannah Friedman, definitely not a newcomer, a lot of credits, but to this bunch, getting her name in there, that's a big thing. Roadies, Wet Hot American Summer, and the upcoming Willow. So there you go, in-house, keeping it in-house there, Disney there. So any thoughts on those names that we can get into individual episodes? Any thoughts on that? Jennifer, what do you think of the Wall-E of it all?
Oh, man, when I saw his name, I went, oh, they brought in the closer. They brought in the guy, and he is. He's in the last two episodes.
Yeah.
I watched Toy Story. I just watched Finding Nemo and Finding Dory last week. Those movies, I don't know. I've seen them so many times, but the emotional, the heart, oh my gosh, there's so many devastating moments that just, I mean, this is a fish, and seeing Dory like losing her family, I was just like welling up with tears. Mm-hmm. Why? But it's because he knows how to root these emotional moments in truth, no matter if it's a fish or a bunch of toys or now Kenobi. And that to me makes me very excited, right? Because we've been talking about that, the emotional depth, getting to see the inner turmoil of Kenobi and how are they going to top Revenge of the Sith? That's what I've been wondering. Well, they brought in the man who can make that happen. So I was very excited by that name.
I agree with your analysis, and I was just really, really enjoyed your good promo there of fish, toys, and now Kenobi.
And a space wizard.
And a space wizard. Yeah. I think I'm excited by a lot of the writers. I do think, continuing just for a minute, our who did what story. Mm-hmm. I think based on the credits. So Hannah Friedman and Andrew Stanton are ampersanded with Joby Harold, which means team, that they wrote together. They're also credited is actual, either written by or teleplay. So my analysis is that Joby Harold took over as the main writer and brought in some other writers to work on specific episodes, story beats. And I think Hannah Friedman and Andrew Stanton are probably, brought in after Joby Harold to work on like actual script work. Mm. I think Stuart Beatty is credited as no ampersands and story by. So I think at some point it escaped the laser eye of Star Wars pundits. And I think at some point Stuart Beatty did a treatment either before or after Hossein Amini. And there are elements of his story treatment that are still in this. Nice. I also think it's significant that all of these writers are names. They all have management. I mean, most writers have management, but they have powerful management. I think they have every motivation to want to get some credits financially, reputation-wise, and I think it's great for Lucasfilm. Lucasfilm benefits by going, look at all these great writers who contributed. Mm-hmm. So that's my – I wanted to finish that kind of analysis of the big picture of who might have done what and when.
So Joseph, you just made me connect something. And I'm just going to do this here on Force Center. Stuart Beatty wrote the movie.
Really?
Oh.
He's from Australia. In that era when all the news was breaking, I had a friend who's friends with him. And she straight up said, my friend is coming to announce the Kenobi movie at D23. And we all went there expecting it, and not a thing happened.
Oh,
and we never heard again what happened.
Oh.
And my friend did not know what happened And then I've been sitting on this for years. A friend of a friend. It sounds like a joke. A friend of a friend's mom's personal trainer.
What? No.
Said,
really?
I had a client. This client showed me a script of this Kenobi movie, like, or said that he finished it. And so my friend was like, hey, does this mean anything to you? And I said, what's the name? She said the name. And I was like, yeah, that's the same name. So two mutual, independent sources, this is about 2016, had said, hey, this guy wrote the Kenobi movie. Okay. Nothing ever happened.
That makes perfect sense. He wrote a movie.
He wrote the movie. Yeah.
Then Hossein Amini came in, apologies on the name, came in and turned it into a television show. Then Joby Harold came in as the new head writer. And in the process, either Joby Harold or the general Lucasfilm team said, hey, why don't you collaborate a little bit with these two powerhouse writers who are also internal to our little family and who maybe Hannah Friedman and Andrew Stanton are interested in doing some more Star Wars. So why don't you work a little bit on this one? Yeah. Get in the groove. Meet everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised to see an announcement of a Hannah Friedman or Andrew Stanton led show. So there we go. Between your... your friend of a friend's mom's personal trainer and ampersands. I think we broke the story.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no one quote me on it. But that all made a ton of sense. All right, cool. Sorry, I should have done this before. It's been a long weekend, and I didn't connect the name. Yes. All right. Yeah,
that makes breaking sense. News. We just had real breaking news.
get your lawyers ready. But no, that all tracks. That all tracks, and past the hot potato of writing in Hollywood.
Yeah, it is the way of things. Ken, you framed a very good question that I then moved us away from to talk more about ampersands and personal trainers, but about what these writers mean and what they're going to bring. What do you have feelings about? How much of their contributions we're going to see and what it means to Kenobi?
I love the collateral of it all, especially if that was going to be part of the movie, which is, if anyone's familiar with that, Jamie Foxx, Jada Pinkett Smith, Tom Cruise, Michael Mann film. It's just one of those, it's a suspense thriller on one hand, and it is the long, dark tea time of the soul, as I always say, to Douglas Adams. Of everyone, of a cab driver, of a killer, and looking inside of yourselves. It's a really deep reflective movie. So that kind of being a baseline for this really deep reflective part of Kenobi's life just gets me excited. I'm excited about that. And then, but same with Wall-E, right? Not a lot of dialogue in old Wall-E there. It's told in a different way. And I expect there to be a lot of dialogue, but all those things, don't they just kind of sync up with what we think Kenobi's shattered soul is at this point in his life?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. For me, I mean, I think, Stuart, I haven't seen Collateral, so it being an action thriller with some dark elements, Dark Night of the Soul, Dark Tea Time of the Soul, that makes a ton of sense for the movie version. Moving into actual, I think probably script work and story beat work. Hannah Friedman has done a ton of things, like early memoir success. It's been YouTube, working on Willow Now, lots of things, but clearly has like comedy chops. So I think bringing a little bit of those comedy chops and I always want to be careful about the way I say this. I'm sure has incredible talents as a writer, period. But I do think it is valuable to have the perspective of a woman, much like Phoebe Waller-Bridge is just an incredible writer. She also really did bring a lot to No Time to Die in the script from not just being a great writer, but also having a different perspective. Mm-hmm. So I think that's vital. And then to Jennifer's point about the quality of fish and toy storytelling that in robot storytelling that Andrew Stanton has done, I think he clearly has a love of genre in an understanding of not just character and bringing it all home and tying it up in a bow, like Jennifer was saying, but the genres that Star Wars was based on. He worked on John Carter, which the film, which, did not do well at the box office, but a lot of people have had a critical reassessment of, but that's like, John Carter is like, that's core pulp DNA of Star Wars. I found this this quote from the Wikipedia page where he's the Wikipedia page is talking about how he is possibly going to, I think it's from like 2020, maybe teaming up with, I think, Searchlight Pictures to do another live action science fiction film. And it says the film will mark Stanton's third venture into the science fiction genre following WALL-E and John Carter. Stanton has been quoted many times saying that science fiction is his favorite genre. Films like Star Wars, Blade Runner, Aliens, as well as Edgar Rice Burroughs' novel, Princess of Mars, helped shape his interest in the genre. So not just the utter storytelling chops of being a huge factor of Pixar's amazing success, but also like he is a, I have been dipped in the DNA that made Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that's what I care about the most.
I really like how it feels like it's a collaboration between all these writers. I think that it's a good thing to get all these different perspectives. I think it's what Disney has been doing so well in recent years, you know, from Frozen to Moana to, Encanto. Like, part of the reason why those films are so great is because they ask, they collaborate, they bring in other writers, other directors and say, hey, what do you guys think? And then they share their ideas. And I think that Star Wars can really benefit from that. I love Jon Favreau. I love, you know, Dave Filoni. I love what they've done with the Mandoverse. But I think moving forward, I think that this is really, to me, it's really exciting because you can get just maybe even newer writers, newer voices. And then through that experience, they can go off and helm their own shows. And that is thrilling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm really excited by this news. I think the variety of voices, it makes me really excited for it. And then knowing that all of this great script work then gets funneled to Deborah Chow, who's on set, and Ewan McGregor, who's the kind of actor who's not just like... Stan, where and I say what? He's the kind of actor to go, why am I feeling this? Am I really angry in this moment, or am I sad? Like, he's really an actor who engages, you know?
Yes.
So all this great work then gets funneled into sort of, you know, these, you know, final voices.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all of it just builds, you know, clearly we're very excited for the show. I don't care what day they air it and how many episodes. We're so excited. I always kind of keep getting surprised that I could get more excited. This made me more excited. All the names, now even more excited live on the show, remembering a bit of information I had buried in my subconscious. I am just over the moon. That's my great analysis. Over the moon.
Yeah. Well, I think that's very well said. I will join you over the moon.
Over the moon and the twin suns. Any final thoughts here on the tales of ampersands in Star Wars writing?
Now I'm just I'm very fascinated with his personal trainer script story. I want to see a show about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we always say, how many years on 4Center, we always say we make jokes like, you don't know what kind of parties you're going to be at or coffee shops you're going to sit in. It's so weird how information travels in this town.
Yeah, it really is.
Including someone getting a nudge to check the WGA website, you know? There you go. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to recover and regroup. And we are going to dive into some more stories after that break. Before we do, though, we want to have a 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do you have?
Well, if you want to get even more Kenobi before the next Kenobi book comes out, you can check out Master and Apprentice by Claudia Gray, one of my favorite Star Wars books.
Absolutely. Check out that book by downloading your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. All right, we're going to do it. We're going to pick up the pieces, take a break, come back with more news here on 4Center.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the personal trainer gossip news source of the galaxy. This is Force Center. I apologize, I just on air realized a connection. I thought that was a fun moment. We're gonna leave it all that. But we are gonna also keep talking about Kenobi, which, by the way, is a great thing. I love Joseph. You know, Kenobi's getting his day in the sun, and not that he's been an undervalued character in Star Wars, but there's something special about Kenobi getting all the spotlight.
Absolutely. It's really great. I do think it's significant because he's been around forever. But as we've talked about, he is often there to support the Skywalker story. And it feels like a lot of stories that are coming out now are there. Well, they're about him. Finally, Kenobi gets to shine.
He does get to shine. He gets to continue to shine in a book coming out very soon. Mike Chen's new book, Star Wars Brotherhood, is on the way this May, and an exclusive excerpt was released on StarWars.com. As always, if anyone wants to go completely blind to these books, we understand. So, spoiler warning there. Kenobi is on the trail investigating problems on the separatist world of Cato Nemodia. This we kind of know because it's the business on Cato Nemodia that we're going to find out. And in this clip, if you will, he meets Ventress. Asajj Ventress, we get the meeting here. So how do we feel about this? How do we feel knowing we're getting to see this introduction in this book? It's a big Kenobi canon moment and Ventress canon moment as well. Jen, Ventress thoughts.
I was excited to read this excerpt. I mean, I love their kind of frenemy relationship, their flirtation. They're kind of how they antagonize each other. We just get to see more of that. And I like that. You know, Mike Chen, he wrote a blog post sharing a little bit about the story. And he said that it's a character-driven examination of trauma, extremism, purpose, and letting go with lightsabers. yeah, and he said that he wanted to show that Obi-Wan feels pressure from having to live up to his promise to Qui-Gon while also having to become kind of like a parent. So he was excited to explore that because he's also a really huge fan of the prequels. And that his passion, oh, it's a big plane or something going overhead. his passion for the prequels and for this story, it got me really excited.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's well said, Joseph.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited. I really loved his story in the From a Certain Point of View, Empire Strikes Back book. So I'm really excited for his take on this. And yeah, knowing that he is very, very invested in a big fan. And I love to hear, I didn't read that particular blog. I read some other things about how he built out some new characters that he's adding to the Star Wars world in his book. And I enjoyed that those process things. I didn't read that. And I think that's such a fascinating part of the Kenobi Anakin saga that is definitely hinted at in the movies and in, you know, different writers and fans I know are really excited about that. So I'm excited he is diving in of that. Obi-Wan goes right from like, I did it. I graduated. I'm free from college. What should I do? Oh, I guess I'm kind of a dad. I'm not really comfortable with being seen as a dad. You know, I don't get to have my own adulthood. And now this weird period that Mike Chen is writing about where Kenobi is shifting into, well, there's a war on. Okay, that's not great, but I'll find my way. And kind of getting something that I think he must kind of want of moving to being brothers, because I think that's a relationship that he feels more comfortable in. I don't think he ever felt comfortable or knew what to do with the father role that Anakin needed, that Qui-Gon, you know, vacated by dying, not his fault. So I think that I'm really interested in that of like, if Kenobi is reflecting on, I never found the perfect groove being his father figure, but maybe this will be great to be brothers.
I love that angle too. I'm just like, kind of like, hey, no, we're friends, buddy. Let's go out. Let's go. You want to go play ping pong? Let's go hang out. Want to go video arcade? We're brothers.
Well, yeah. And it's their dynamic in Clone Wars where it feels like, you know, they've got this sort of like fun rivalry, but Kenobi still does kind of lecture him and sass him every once in a while, but is also, you know, impressed by him and loves him. And it's a fascinating dynamic just on that level. And yeah, thrilled. Totally agree with Jennifer. I think that flirting, that intense flirting in the Clone Wars animated series, particularly in the earlier episodes, is so great. And it's one of those things in Star Wars of like, why leave that on the table? Let's look at that, you know?
Right.
You know, the excerpts, like at one point, I think there's it says Ventress sucked in a breath, holding it as if to tease him. Like, well, geez, this is just Bridgerton with lightsabers, and I love it.
Yeah, absolutely love it there. Anything specific other than Ventress biting her bottom lip, a half amusement coming just, I'm reading it right now. It's great stuff. Anything specific here? I'll say this. I personally love this Kenobi carrying an item of sentimental value to him. And a Jedi having some sort of attachment to memories there. I love just starting point there. And what do you think that might be? Have you thought about that one, Joseph?
You know what? I have not given that one much thought. I've had a lot of different Kenobi thoughts to have.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I haven't got to that one, but it's a great little detail. I think I was so focused on because everybody was, you know, hyping like it's the Ventress thing, and it's such a weird thing to be like, I'm in the middle of my day. I got to stop and read a book excerpt so the book excerpt is not spoiled. So I was really focused on the Ventress thing. I think I'm also just really fascinated with the political dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That this is a war, but it's early on, and that tension of what's going on in this scene really is Kenobi is, you know, being the negotiator, the diplomat, you know, early in the war where you can think maybe we can still kind of talk things out. Am I talking to a diplomat from across a political divide, or am I talking to a warrior with a lightsaber who's going to start slaughtering people? And I got to go from negotiator to defending people, you know, that just that tension between this is a political disagreement and maybe we can still work it out versus Count Dooku is behind this and he's a Sith Lord and it's a war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. even that line from Ventress, I think we'll be friends, and perhaps you can have it when I'm done with my investigation, talking about that item. But I love that starting point there. And the Dooku stuff's pretty great. Jed, I don't know if you had any reaction to Ventress claiming that Dooku, you know, he speaks highly of your order. Toby, kind of words at play there.
Yes, it's just great. And I can just hear Nika Futterman's voice. You know, I can hear James Arnold Taylor's voice. Like, it's so exciting. And I love how he mentioned, I think it's towards the end of the excerpt, where he's like, he sees the hint of metal on her hip or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just building that tension. One last thing that I thought was interesting from Mike Chen's blog post was that he said that he wrote this during the Delta surge of COVID, which was challenging because he was juggling his day job. His child was on Zoom school, so he was like homeschooling. And then he was also writing this book. And he said he had a very short amount of time, a quick deadline. But he said that he was just so inspired that like the words were just coming out of him. And he's been envisioning he's had these thoughts about these characters and it just all came free flowing. So I really am excited to read this.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think the other thing for me is I know that, you know, the business on Cato Pneumonia, that doesn't count. That's like a fun moment that we get to examine. But I love Cato Pneumonia because of those weird, beautiful bridge cities. And I love hearing Kenobi go like, I haven't seen anything quite like this. It's quite beautiful. But that also speaks to like some great political complexity of this era that I love, where like Cato Pneumonia is trying to be like, yeah, we're separate from the Trade Federation. And we know from some Clone Wars episodes, it's more complicated than that. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, we are diving into the prequel era. Indeed, this book comes out May 10th. We will, of course, be reading and covering it here. We might be, you know, reading it in hotel rooms while watching Kenobi at Celebration and hanging
we'll
out
see.
With us
we'll
screenwriters.
I need to reexamine the actual excerpt, but this is the wild bad Kenobi theory of his personal thing. Maybe it's Anakin's Padawan braid that he's holding on to remember when he was young.
could be indeed. We'll find out soon enough here. So that brings to close our discussion on Star Wars news. A lot of news to discuss. But we, before we get out of here, are going to look ahead to Star Wars Past. Looking ahead this week for a Star Wars This Day in History to talk about. We got a great one. This week, we look back to the birth of the galaxy's smoothest scoundrel, Billy Dee Williams, the man that brought Lando to life, was born this week on April 6, 1937 in New York City. Of course, he was raised in Harlem long before he arrived in the Star Wars galaxy. Billy Dee graduated from the prestigious LaGuardia High School of Music and Art and Performing Arts. That is the one that became, I remember the TV show Fame when I was growing up. That's what it's based off of. And he graced many stages on Broadway and made his way to the silver screen in 1959 before, of course, getting launched onto the national stage with 1971. That was Brian's song, I believe, 1971. Anyways, as we celebrate his 84th birthday, what are some of our favorite things about having Billy Dee Williams be such an important part of the Star Wars saga, Jen?
Oh, you know, I first saw Billy Dee Williams in Return of the Jedi. I never saw his appearance in Empire when I was a kid. So for me, it was seeing him, a black man, being a hero of the rebellion, Rebel Alliance, and an important member of this core group with Han and Leia. Like, he was just as important. And that for me was really powerful. Because I was like, wow, there's no prejudice in Star Wars? There's no racism in Star Wars? In this fantasy world, that's where I want to go. That was really, it provided a necessary form, a place to escape. Because I was like, wow, he can be every bit as equal as them. Of course, when we learn about their relationship in Empire and stuff like that, you know, that's a whole other thing. But but yeah, his seeing him on screen was really, really important for me as a kid and still is to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. Joseph.
Yeah, no, I think we talk a lot about the steps that diversity and representation still need to take. But yeah, it's undeniably huge. It's certainly a very, very positive impact on me to have Lando in Star Wars growing up. And, you know, I love the character in the same way I loved Han, of like, I wish I could be as cool as him. And I think what he brought to Star Wars, and it's, you know, you can see it in lots of other characters. Han is super charming. He's a scoundrel, but he's a rough around the edges scoundrel. It's charming how you have your life duct taped together scoundrel, right? And Lando is a, my cape is always pressed and I would never spill food on my clothes charming. Like, he is suave. He's this different kind of charming. There's so much in Empire in particular about how they're both scoundrels, but he has this different flavor of scoundrel, and he really brought that energy to Star Wars that pops up in lots of different characters. I think also a huge thing for me is just the, you have it with Han, but it's kind of a different perspective with Lando, of the person who has the instinct to be selfish and turn away from the fight and chooses not to, right? He can't ignore the fight. He tries to deal with it, but it comes to him. It comes to Cloud City. And he, like a lot of the characters, relearns that lesson in the sequel trilogy too, that, you know, you can't ignore the fight. He's such a great symbol of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lando's always one of my favorite characters. And it is, you know, as a kid, for me, you know, I probably connected him on a different level, right? And that's the great thing about Lando. He does all those wonderful things you both addressed and talked about, the representation, diversity, all those kind of things. But I'm 7 and 8, not fully understanding that. I'm just seeing it, right? I'm just feeling the effects of that. Love the character. And to your point, Joseph, too, I've always said I'm a Han Solo guy, meaning I have a lot of duct tape holding my life together. So I think I looked up to Lando in a way. I always joke, it's a joke, but like, I grew up with knowing that my mom was like, that Lando's a good looking guy. And so I loved having Billy Dee, who kind of owns all of that, you know, including, I think it is Empire Dreams when he talks about, you know, him coming in and there are important, you know, bigger reasons to have him in there, Lando, but also he says, yeah, and that was kind of cute. And he's just always represents that. And then, yeah, I always said, I think as I got older, Lando as a survivor, Lando as someone who's not selling out his friends as much as just trying to survive, but then, you know, has to make the bigger choices and stuff. Like you said, Joseph, I just always love that. And I love that Billy Dee is defensive and protective of Lando in that way too. The Star Wars Celebration Chicago speech he gave of just like, hey, you know, no one got killed. You know, like, I had to do it. And I loved even after all these years, Billy Dee is ready to defend Lando and what he was doing and what the character is actually about in a lot of different ways. So I just love having Billy Dee around for that. And so thrilled that I think we got him in the right way in The Rise of Skywalker, not a cameo or a throwaway spot in episode 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that he continues to reprise his role, you know, in Star Wars Rebels, lending his voice to the Freemaker Adventures, the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special. I like that. I like when the Star Wars actors are like, yeah, I'll come in. I'll do a session, a VO session.
Yeah. There's no pushing the character away. He fully embraces Lando, which is so, so great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love it. And as you know, we all work and attend conventions. We know people have helped run or, you know, build conventions. Every story I've ever heard from Billy Dee being at conventions is pure class. He's Lando to the core. And I love that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. That is so happy birthday ahead of schedule here to Billy Dee Williams on April 6th. That is our look back at Star Wars Past. We are going to look ahead to how you can find us. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Podcast available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and a lot more. Just search and find us. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us at Patreon. That's the one I was trying to say. Patreon.com/Force Center. From there, you get into our Discord and have a wonderful discussion with our Force Center friends. You can follow me at Ken Knapsack or go to my website, kennapsack.com. I got dates for upcoming shows, though. Who knows? Things are always changing. The thing's still floating out there. Be careful, everybody. Wear your mask is all I'll say, though I am fine. Don't worry about me. I want to remind you to check out, if you'd like, globalgiving.org and search for the Ukrainian Crisis Relief Fund. Obviously, still that's the situation in Ukraine still ongoing, even as we record, but that is to help support the people affected directly by it. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all of the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. I'll continue to share some action figures that I'm not going to open. Got some more Kenobi ones coming up as well. And you can find all of my other adventures, including, I think, pretty soon, some shows back to actually performing. You can find that information eventually on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. I want to continue to highlight the organization Vote Forward. It is a service where you write letters to people, letting them know why you vote and encourage them to use their power to vote. If you are interested in that, you can check it out at Vote Forward, which is votefwd.org.
Love it, love it. Jennifer, take us home.
Well, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Jennifer Landa, and my TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. And today I am spotlighting the Amidala Initiative, which is a campaign to support trans youth and their families through Equality Texas. The initiative was created collaboratively by over 50 fandom creators, like our friends Star Wars Explain, Molly and Alex. They are dedicated to speaking out against anti-trans efforts. And currently they have a GoFundMe set up, and right now they've raised about $14,000 out of their $25,000 goal. You can learn more about the initiative on their Twitter page at Amidala Helps.
Wonderful, wonderful indeed. Well, that is it for this week. We'll see you this week for some deep dive, some questions, and next week on the news. Who knows when Kenobi will be airing then? We'll find out. So for Obi-Wan Kenobi, for all Australian screenwriters and personal trainers, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted. Where I felt adventures pulse with every step. And where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota. So little time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.